It's so far, me and Bruce listened to Wind and Pain. It's fucking, honestly, it sounds really fucking good. I'm gonna get this baby printed up. Listen to Red Eyes now.
From Super High Quality Records, this is the Super High Quality Live Drugs Podcast with the War on Drugs.
Adam Gronowski,
Robbie Bennett, stage center, left, keyboards.
Charlie Hall,
guitar and
drums.
Dave stage Hartley, bass. I stand by
Anthony.
Anthony
LaMarca, stage right,
John Natchez,
guitar and keys.
Horns and auxiliary keys. Stage left rear.
You getting all this, Dom? You getting all this?
I'm Dominic East. This is part two.
I'm going to be first in, baby.
Respect that.
Z-Von.
Bro, I didn't even know who Warren V-Von was.
So tell me about the first time you played the song.
Do we really want to relive that?
Right. I mean, the first time was we did the Music Cares benefit out in at a house in Pasadena. I had been listening to that the Excitable Boy a lot and just thought it was such like an incredible song.
The Excitable Boy.
There he is.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's you.
Anyway, we rehearsed it at Sonora, the studio I had rented, and it sounded cool. And then I thought I was confident on the lyrics, and then we went to the benefit, and right before we go on, our label rep guy was like, Jackson Brown is here, and he produced that song or that record or whatever. So we're like, whoa, amazing. And then obviously when we played it, I totally forgot all the lyrics. I didn't recover. I like to think that, you know, I wish I could say that I just took a breath and then we crushed it. But no, I definitely spiraled and did not know the lyrics and was tempted to make reference to the fact that he was in the audience. I don't remember if I did, but it was only like 30 people. It wasn't really that big a deal. Honestly, I don't even know if he knew that we were singing a song he produced. But that was the first time that we played it. And let's just say it's only gotten better.
Warren Z-Von. Very nice. Very nice. Tell me about your early relationship with Jackson Brown. Was he responsible for getting you a legitimate record deal?
Yes, he was. I had moved away, far away from Hollywood. I was not having a great deal of success there.
Yeah.
I was living in Spain, and Jackson twisted arms and that sort of thing, and sent me a postcard and suggested that I come home and produce the first album.
Now, what were you doing in Spain, exactly?
I was singing country and western songs in an Irish bar.
If it was a failure, it was like an honorable failure because, like, you know, there was no hamming or faking.
Yeah, and everybody there was pretty much oiled up in some Cabernet action. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is only 30 people are there. So I feel like more nervous in front of 30 than I am in front of 10,000. For
agree,
sure.
Yeah.
For
agree,
sure.
Yeah.
100%.
I can't say I remember being really nervous, but I do think I was probably pretty greased on Chardonnay or something.
The phone don't. Sun refused to shine. Never thought I'd have to pay so dearly for what was already mine.
Timing was a little bad on that Jackson Brown tip.
I don't remember. I think we probably let's just say, put it to bed for a few months after that performance of it. But whenever the record was done and we went back out on tour, that's probably when I think we dusted it off. When Anthony started doing the swell, like the pedals, aping that pedal steel part in the recording, that's really what it was like. Oh, this is like a little closer to, I think, the vibe.
Yeah, I don't know. I just
cranked up the peavey and let it fly.
Yeah. The song doesn't feel like a cover just because it's really natural for us to play it. You know, like there's some songs I feel like when you cover it, you're like air quotes playing a cover. And then other times it's just like you're playing what you like to play. I'm just playing like chords with tremolo and reverb on my Gretsch, and like that's like my favorite thing to do. You know, it's like, oh yeah, that sounds like me playing guitar. But it's also perfect for that song.
A cover is something that like Adam in particular puts a lot of thought into, like whether he wants to do it. And then it like becomes part of the set.
When all six of us dug into it, it was like, oh, this is becoming like those bands that have a cover song that kind of hopefully becomes theirs in some way. I think we just like fell into that song as like, this is all of what each of us is doing is kind of right up each of our alleys, you know?
Once we started putting a song like this in our set, you start to own the song. Like it becomes like your material and it feels like, I don't know, it gives you a place to like do another song that's like that or something. Like it gives precedence for like when you're recording more music, like, oh, this is like our band can sound like this. We do songs like this so we can do more songs like this.
I mean, my one thought about the Zevon song is that it sort of represents, I feel like, the evolution of Adam's songwriting, where it's just become more and more compositional with each record, like kind of like aspiring to more sophisticated chord changes and more sophisticated melodies. And then I feel like you have the Zevon song, which is like a classic, just like songwriter's songwriter. Wait, yeah, songwriter's songwriter song. Dylan loved that song. It's like it appealed to like people who really understand the craft of a song. I mean, I'm speaking for Adam here, but it felt like that was like, this is what I want to try to do going forward, is like not just write, you know, the same stuff I wrote before, but like try to fucking level up a little bit with the chords.
Yeah, I mean, that song is like when you start, like when you, after like the 20th time of singing it, you're like, Jesus, it's like, it's so simple. And it's just lyrically, it's like so simple. And yet like, it feels like, how could you ever write something in three lines that sounds like you wrote it in 3 seconds? That's like the truest lyric. You know what I mean? It's like, it's, I don't even know. Like you have to write like thousands of lyrics to have something that good. It's a completely other level of like how simple and great it is.
Once we started really playing it and like getting inside this tune, like Adam's singing was just like a whole nother level, making a parallel with the songwriting. I feel like I started to hear his singing in a new way.
Yeah. Anthony and Dave are the cloud lifters in our band, and that was actually inspired by whatever credits given on the Excitable Boy as the background vocals. What is it, the Gentleman Boys or something? They kind of named the background vocals, like they gave the backing guys a name on, so we kind of did the same with our guys.
Like if you had told me in 2008 that like we would cover this song and like sing some sweet harmonies on it and stuff, I would have been very surprised, just because 2008 War on Drugs was a lot different than 2018.
Yeah, I guess maybe people wouldn't think that the War on Drugs would have, you know, like backing vocals or, but you cover a song like that and you try to make it true. And so you're like, hey, Dave and Anthony, why don't you guys fucking do some sweet background vocals? And then they try it on another song too, because it sounds so good on the cover song you're doing. So then they do it on Strangest Thing. And then the next record, there's like a cup more than a few songs with serious background vocals. And it's like, it's the only way to like evolve is to like just try something that you hadn't really tried before, you know?
You kind of step out there a little bit and then you realize the ways in which you can make that thing that originally felt unnatural or felt out of character suddenly fit. And then you see how you can use that more.
The reason it maybe gels with like the band ethos is that there's not a lot of talking about it or figuring it out. It's just sort of like, if it works really naturally right away, then we roll with it.
Try and sing the note that he's not singing.
If there's like too much hammering it out on a piano or something, we usually bag it.
When you're up there in front of people, you know pretty quick if it's working or not. I mean, Dave is much more of a vocal head than me.
Not true. Erroneous. You're the one who had a Four Freshmen playlist on your freaking iPod. First time I ever got in a van with you, you're like, oh, I want to listen to some Four Freshmen. I was like,
marry me.
I was living in LA full time by the end of the Lost in the Dream touring, and I had rented a studio out here and began working on the next record. And all of a sudden, I was living two or three blocks from some of the most iconic, you know, LA studios. So I think when I kind of became obsessed with Excitable Boy and especially Accidentally Like a Martyr, there was a certain pull knowing this song that I was obsessed with that was blowing my mind in every way was done only a couple hundred feet from the studio that I was working out of, you know?
With this band, when we do go to make a record, I feel like the choices of studio are not just, oh, this is a sweet studio, but like, this is a studio where this happened.
Yeah, we actually recently on this record that we're working on that'll never be finished, we recorded on the Zevon piano in Studio 2 at Sunset. But they recorded Like a Martyr in Studio 1, but the piano has since moved to Studio 2, and we use that.
It's a wonderful piano. I think the studio legends of pianos, it's hard to, you're never sure if someone's like full of shit and if that's really the piano, but it sounds like that piano. It's inspiring to play, you know, like when I listen back to some of those piano takes from Sunset, it's just like, that's it, that's Zevon.
We all love gear, you know, like, and what's fun about gear is like how it inspires you.
Oh yeah, that's Z's piano.
You know, I mean, I definitely am a believer that, you know, instruments belong in a certain room. I mean, they get comfortable there, and it's like that wood is settled there, and that's where it wants to live. And so, you know, that's like, I love that. Like, I love walking into a room and like seeing what just kind of is like, what's the natural habitat? Like, what drums belong here?
Yeah, I also feel like sometimes in these studios, though, it's cool to like have all that stuff around, but I always just use my stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I've ever picked a guitar off the wall at some studio and thought that I could actually like do a keep or take with it. You know what I mean? Like, it's cool to like plug a 60 Strat into something, but I have never played that guitar ever. I've not like sat on the couch and watched like 6 episodes of NYPD Blue strumming this guitar. You know what I mean? Like, that's like what I'm gonna wanna like record and sing with at the same time, you know? But it's cool to get like wrapped up in that stuff and to kind of like try to hone in on some ghosts and like be a part of the story.
We're a bunch of East Coast kids like who are just like a band kind of going out and recording some songs in these like chambers of the like session gods.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. I mean, I could give two shits what the room sounds like because, let's be honest, they all kind of sound the same.
I love playing keys and organ, which is sort of funny because like I'm definitely like, you know, I'm mainly in the band as a horn player.
Untrue.
There was one little tour I couldn't do because of some family stuff. And as a sub for me, this guy, Daniel Clark, who's a great keyboard player, subbed in, and he's amazing.
I mean, just backing up to your claim that you're not in the band for your keyboards, it did take a heavy hitter to replace you, John.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. But he's great, and as it should have been, he brought his own thing to it. He put in this one melody line that was like the Daniel line that still remains part of the arrangement today. It's like, and in my head, I'm like, oh, I gotta play the Daniel line. Da, 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 da. After such a long time,
time out of mind. Warren's great, great American piano player, and it's always when you have to do something like that, you're like, oh man, am I doing him justice? Am I doing this? The notes kind of fall in as you just like would imagine. There's nothing like too tricky. And then there's this like C section that comes up almost like a bridge, but it happens twice in a strange time signature. What time signature is that?
7.
Or is it?
4.
It's just like alternates like a bar of 7 with it's like 8 and then 7.
It's 7, yeah.
4-8.
But there's some chords he plays in there that it's so easy to get turned around. I kind of like just came up with like a simple version of that I could not get turned around in. What I did like left more space for Dave to kind of wander on the bass.
I just love like kind of closing my eyes, sitting back and just head full of tunes, 4-string friend. I just kind of love when you don't even think about your instrument and you're just kind of listening and playing, and it just sort of, your instrument sort of disappears.
Honestly, this band, 90% of it is them doing what they do. There's not a lot of mixing.
The end section of that song is when that slightly off time signature, what is it? How many beats is it in that bar there?
4.
15 rather than whatever. That's when mixing this band gets really fun, is when they're all letting loose. Everyone's letting loose a little bit.
We do our thing the way we do it, and it's filtered through us and everything, but we've always covered like classic singer-songwriter songs. Like, we've never covered like fucking Spaceman 3 or something. You know what I mean? It'd be easy for us to cover something like some reference point for our band.
Sometimes you can just sit down, I think, at my keyboard station and like plug through a bunch of pianos and synthesizers and stuff and like hit like 2 chords. You're like, oh, that sounds like The War on Drugs.
All the other songs are like very much based on like sonics. And like this is one where it was just like piano, organ, 2 guitars, drums, bass. You know, great song.
I started using my old 60s Harmony electric guitar in this song. It's the first guitar I ever owned. My parents bought it for me when I was 13 or so, and there's just nothing in the way of my playing and my singing. You know, on this song, my job is to like sing the song, you know, and the song means so much to me. I'm just like mesmerized by its simplicity. So it's almost like having like a really simple guitar. It's like there's nothing in the way, you know.
That was quite a moment. I mean, not to try to like relive the trauma or anything, but nothing like playing a song for the first time in front of a legend who produced it and having the wheels completely fall off. Completely fall off. And it wasn't completely Adam's fault. It was coming out of that 7 thing. We got turned around as a band, and it was sort of like the boat started to tip a little bit. We've never played something in 7 before, I don't think, as a band, ever. It's not our forte. We're a pretty 4-4 bunch of dudes.
Help us out.
I know. If he had just stood up and been like, actually...
The Super High Quality Podcast was put together by me, Dominic East, with help and support from Adam. Audio mix by Andrew Guerin. Thanks to the guys in the band, as well as our amazing crew.
Craig McQuist,
Bob Strakel,
Lawrence Eves,
Matthew Walsh,
Ben Silverstein.
And thanks also to Caroline Klein and everyone at Fort William Artist Management. The album Live Drugs is out now on Super High Quality Records.
Thank you so much.
Does anyone have like cardboard on their ceiling to keep their dog from peeing on their synthesizers?
Not yet.
Because I do.
I have like 18 questions right now.
Hey, Dom, don't press stop yet.
This is the podcast.
This is the good stuff.